And welcome back to episode 3 of Upon Further Review with
the Podcast Profs.
And who are you?
I am Dr. Soren Fanning, and you are Dr. Hair Professor
Anthony Moretti. Yeah, that's it. Him. Yeah, exactly. Welcome again to, episode 3 of Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs. You know, a few minutes ago, when we were getting everything prepped, I just threw out an oddball question, which I often do, but you don't say a word. I often throw out an oddball question, and the one I asked today to both you, Soren, and to John Roland, who is making sure that we begin and end at least relatively close to time and stay on task, I asked the two of you, by the way, anything interesting happening in history on this date? And boy, did that lead to some interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah. All right. Whenever you ask a historian that, our eyes get to light up. So, on this date in 1901, U.S. President William McKinley, after lingering for 8 days after being shot, succumbed to his wounds, thus allowing Theodore Roosevelt to become the youngest person ever to ascend the presidency.
And he didn't do too much with that bully pulpit of his, did he?
Yeah. Well, you know, all he managed to do was get his face on a mountain somewhere. So,
well, that's pretty low standard, right? Or is that a pretty high standard?
High altitude standard?
We should just keep going.
Yeah. Also, on this day, 1917, Russia officially proclaims itself a republic.
But this is not the only interesting date or interesting factoid involving that country and one of its people.
Indeed not, because, well, not so much a person, but a representative. On this date, 1959, the Soviet probe Luna 2 becomes the first man-made object to reach the moon, specifically reached it at terminal velocity. It crashed into the moon.
Whoops.
But that was actually its design. It was. So that was not a design flaw.
And the reason that that is important is because you are a bit glum today.
Well,
because
it's
tomorrow,
bittersweet,
because tomorrow we will also be able to talk about, although not on this podcast, maybe we should do like a subterranean one or something that nobody knows about and slip it in.
Oh, maybe. But this is that we're going to do a requiem for an American explorer. And this one is not a man. It is not a woman. It is, however, the Cassini space probe,
Well,
Cassini was originally sent to Saturn and has given us just oodles and oodles of data, confirmed that Saturn's moon Titan actually has rivers and lakes on it, although it's not water. But to avoid contaminating the moons of Saturn with earthbound bacteria, Cassini is going to take the big plunge into Saturn's atmosphere itself and will essentially burn itself up. So,
heck of a way to go.
In a blaze of glory.
Indeed.
But
Cassini will be, I think, as the 21st century unfolds, and you know far more about science than I do, but I think that Cassini, as the 21st century unfolds, will provide hours and hours and hours of intriguing data to be poured over as we learn about those country or those planets that we just sort of think of as being out there somewhere.
Well, what's interesting about Cassini, and I'll make this quick.
Why?
They've discovered two things that we did not know before. Thing number one is it looks like one of the moons of Saturn, Enceladus, might be one of the most likely candidates to house life that didn't start on the Earth, which is fascinating. But the other one is that Saturn's moon Titan, which is, I think, either the biggest or second biggest satellite in the solar system, might actually be the most friendly place for humans outside of the Earth. mainly because the atmosphere is thick enough you wouldn't need a spacesuit. You would, however, need a parka.
A little bit cold.
Well, you know, average daytime high of 180 degrees below zero Fahrenheit.
Siberia in July. No.
December, not July.
Wrong part of the year, right?
Right.
Northern hemisphere, not southern hemisphere. Interesting stuff. It will be fun as our kids reach that age where they'll hopefully continue to find science fascinating.
Absolutely.
That they will continue to see some real intriguing nuggets about, you know, what Cassini has been able to present back to us. Yeah. One of the things that we want to also dive into and discuss is, and I know we're probably not going to spend an awful lot of time on this, but Hillary Clinton is hawking a book. And I find it to be a little, you go first, though.
Well, there's two ways to look at it. On the one hand, the last thing the Democrats want to do at this point is relitigate the election of 2016, which calling it a fiasco might be generous.
What's fiasco in Russian, by the way?
I don't know, Kaputnik. Just, Flopnik.
Kaputnik. Isn't that the quarterback who can't get find a team?
Yeah, no, different Nick.
Different
yeah,
Nick.
Different
exactly.
Nick. But we'll get to that too. Unfairly unemployed.
That
Colin
he
def-
that
Kaepernick,
he definitely
but we'll
is.
Get to that. From all the reviews I've seen, this has the makings of this. I think for Secretary Clinton, this was more therapy than anything else. I can't blame her in that regard. As a historian, though, this book is a goldmine because we have the first person immediately after the fact recollection of one of the most fascinating, occasionally fascinating in the, oh my God, it's a 25 car pileup and I can't look away sense, but one of the most fascinating political elections in recent history. And we have her recollections. It's not really a memoir.
Mm-hmm.
So future generations of historians and political scientists are just champing at the bit for this.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Party, not so much.
Here's my problem with it. And you know, I made no secret of the fact that I voted for Hillary Clinton in November. I thought she was the better of the two candidates,
right,
and really the best of the four candidates, if you want to count the two others who were on the ballot as well. Here's my problem with it. It looks so unprofessional. And I know people hawk books all the time. Don't
right.
misunderstand me. But here was a woman who, again, whether you think the election was rigged and hacked, I mean, set that aside for a moment. Here was a woman who came so darn close.
First woman ever to be nominated by a major party
for
president.
And with all of the experience of being the first lady as governor of Arkansas, of being the first lady of the United States, of being a senator, of being a secretary of state. I mean, a resume, if you were a person of politics, to just, you know, can I please have that resume?
Right.
All of that. And it just looks so unseemly to see her trying to get people to buy a book. And as you know, when you're trying to get people to buy a book, you're forced to be, for lack of a better phrase, controversial on some nature. You can't just go out and say, it's a really interesting book and you really should buy it.
Give me
the remote and let me turn on something else.
Well, right, because people are, it's the old version of clickbait. You know,
yes,
you need to get people all riled up. That elected a president last time, getting people riled up.
And let's face it, we're only 10-ish months, so almost 11 months now, removed from Election Day. And the wounds, I don't think, of the country are anywhere near close to even beginning to heal.
In some ways, they've been exacerbated.
They may have been exacerbated. And that is not only Donald Trump's fault.
No, not at all.
I putting that blame on his doorstep. But, you know, the reality is that our political conversations in this country generally begin with, if you're right, let's keep talking. If you agree with me, you're right, and let's keep talking.
Exactly.
If you disagree with me, you're obviously an idiot, and just go away into whatever cave you call home and don't come out.
Which might explain all the people switching channels on from this podcast, but...
Don't do that.
Do people switch channels anymore, by the way?
No. Yeah. By the way, I saw a great photo on the internet the other day, and it was not fake news, by the way. You remember the car window handles?
Oh, yeah. The old
that
manual
was on there,
car
the manual
cranks.
Ones.
Yeah.
And the question was, if you remember this, click like. And there were only like four people who had. It was just wonderful to see.
Well, you know, it's interesting if you look at some of the technologies that are just mm-hmm. dying out.
Mm-hmm.
And some, by the way, that refuse to die.
Yes.
Parking meters, by the way. Those could go the way of the dodo any moment, but they're
not going to happen.
Sticking
Why?
Around.
Because they generate money.
They generate revenue, right. But
we can, you know, you and I have made no secret of the fact that we find this presidency to be deeply flawed, and that is being polite.
Right.
What do you make of the whole conversation that's begun to develop in the last 24 hours about suddenly Donald Trump taking to Twitter and calling the people who he was about to throw out of the country a few weeks ago, now suddenly calling them dreamers, which is the positive term that has been used, and essentially saying that although the Democrats say a deal has been made, the president says a deal has not been made, but it certainly appears that within the next few days, probably, we're going to have a deal that is going to involve two important components, and I mean one for each side. It appears that this president is going to give in on DACA,
right,
and essentially not seek the deportation of 180-ish thousand people.
800,000.
800,000 people. I'm sorry. Not 180, I think, are in college, if I remember correct. That's where that number was in my head. And conversely, the Democrats are going to give in, a word I use carefully, on this whole notion of border security, it will not include authorizing the wall being built.
Correct.
What the heck happened in Washington?
Well, by all accounts, Donald Trump had a bit of an epiphany about 10 days ago.
Being Catholic and that word and Trump, that hurts. Go ahead.
A revelation, you know, maybe Paul that, on the...
Isn't that the last book of the Bible? Are you trying to end the world here, Fanning? I mean, come on.
But no, go ahead. Apparently, by all accounts, he actually turned to one of his aides. It might have been Chief of Staff John Kelly, and say, wow, people really hate me. Like, apparently, that reality has permeated the bubble. So I think what you're seeing now is classic Donald Trump in the sense, I mean, the man has no ideology. The man goes with what is popular, what gets him likes, what gets him applause, what gets him crowds, hence the unhealthy obsession with crowd size. But what he found out is 80% of the country thinks getting rid of DACA is a horrible idea. And as a result, he found that the Democrats just, oh yeah, absolutely, we'll work with you on that. And
in exchange for border security, we can live with that.
Right. No wall. But we will absolutely, what we'll do is we'll give you funding for additional personnel. We'll give you funding for electronic surveillance so you can have a virtual wall. That allows Trump then to go to his base and say, see, I'm still tough on immigration. I don't think it's, and you know, there have been people who've suggested maybe he's playing some sort of like fourth dimensional chess that us mere mortals can't comprehend. I think that's not the case. I think he's honestly realizing his approval numbers are going up. He's getting praise for working with Democrats. Therefore, he's going to keep working with Democrats. And the greener that Paul Ryan's face gets and, you know, the more, you know, constipated Mitch McConnell starts looking.
Can he look any more constipated?
We're not even at peak constipation yet.
Just that's an image. Just keep going.
But bear in mind, he has spent the entire summer before this trashing Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. And what used to be crazy Nancy Pelosi and crying Chuck Schumer, now Chuck and Nancy. So,
two questions. Would this epiphany that you call it, and I'll use that word because I think it fits. Would this epiphany have happened if Steve Bannon were still in the White House?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, no.
All right.
No, absolutely not. This is the effect of essentially having seen Bannon get the boot, along with, back in March, Michael Flynn. They both shared the same worldview. They're both gone now.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly is, I mean, let's face it, John Kelly is a conservative, but he is a
pragmatic, principled
conservative who says, look, I have points of view, but at some point you got to cut a deal. H.R. McMaster is the same way. And we know that President Trump is impressed by and somewhat intimidated by people in uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And there's equal amounts of envy, intimidation, and respect in that mix.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what you're seeing here is pretty much Pavlovian for a guy who grew up on the entertainment circuit, for want of a better term.
And here then becomes the oh question. You know, we always try to move things a day in advance, 2 days in advance, 3 days in advance. But let's advance this 12-ish months. As the national conversation continues, politically, at the ballot box, which party benefits if Donald Trump essentially kicks the, what I'll call the Tea Party wing, to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
And looks at mainstream Republicans and essentially says, the train's starting to leave, get on board.
Right.
And is working with Democrats on a whole host of issues, from tax reform. And am I correct? Didn't the president also tweet this week that he's open to the idea of reworking, not repealing Obamacare?
Yep. Yep, he did.
What's going on here?
Well, it's
who benefits at the ballot box?
Well, and this is what happens when you take a guy who openly brags about being an agent of chaos.
And then does it?
Well, right. I mean, what did you expect? I mean, he said during the campaign, I like being unpredictable. Well, guess what? No one predicted this. And I think all this is going to do is benefit the Democrats for a couple of reasons. Number one, this week brought the total of retirements from the House of Representatives purely on the Republican side.
Yes.
To five.
Five.
Which is a pretty rapid clip, and they all came from competitive districts. That's your canary in the coal mine saying it's not looking good. Second of all, we have to remember that what's good for Trump and what's good for the Republican Party are two different things in Trump's mind. He has always used the Republican Party for a vehicle when it's convenient. Now, Democrats would be wise to remember that transactional approach is going to be the same with them.
Yes, at some point he'll turn on them.
Oh, absolutely. If he perceives it to be in his advantage, absolutely.
So,
but there's one other advantage for the Democrats, though it won't seem like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some people that are worrying, well, you know, if they're cooperating with Trump, how are you going to keep up the energy on the left?
Mm-hmm.
My argument is you can't win a national election purely being anti-somebody. Therefore,
except in 2016. But well, 2016 may turn out to be the historical anomaly.
Yeah, everything I've seen tells me that's the outlier. So my argument is it will actually force the Democratic Party to come up with a coherent platform, which they haven't had to do in ages.
So let's wrap up this with a two-part question that'll have relatively simple answers associated with it. If this Trump's in love with Democrats and vice versa, relatively speaking.
Right. It's a fall fling.
Yeah, a fling. If it continues into 2018, does the Democratic Party have a better or lesser chance of winning the House and or the Senate?
Better.
Better chance.
Let's
go to 2020.
Go ahead.
Does Trump stand a better chance of being reelected in 2020 if he's doing business with the Democrats? Gulp.
Well, and now that one, I don't know. Because at some point he's going to have to shift into campaign mode where he does nothing but attack the Democrats. So in that sense, it's sort of a wash.
And then there is that little, grand jury investigation.
Yeah, well, there is the Mueller investigation. But I would think in 2018, the only way the ground would shift significantly back toward the Republicans, honestly, is if Mike Pence were president and they could just pass Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell's agenda. Because right now, Trump is, he's cast them aside. Because whenever he tries to do what they want, he gets slammed in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
When he works with Democrats, he goes up in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
So from Trump's point of view, there's no bent. I mean, the one thing that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell be saying is the party needs the win. Trump doesn't care about the party. He cares about his poll numbers.
Which leads to the whole question of suddenly would Republicans be more amenable to the idea of voting for impeachment? But that's a discussion for another time.
Short version, yes.
Short version, I think, yes. Do you like consistency?
Depends on what it is.
Well, that's not a consistent answer. I'm trying to weave a question into opening the conversation.
Let me put it this way. If the Parkway West's traffic patterns could change, that would be great. So in that sense, I don't want consistency.
So you are consistent in not liking traffic then?
Yes.
I'm right on board with you on that one, especially if I'm driving when my patience runs out, all right? Which happens often. That Italian ancestry kicks in. How do you want to begin this whole conversation about Jemele Hill and the whole Donald Trump is a white supremacist and should journalists be tweeting such stuff?
Well, it's interesting. At the beginning of this whole conversation, you mentioned how we talked about the national wounds being exacerbated, and you yes. put the caveat that it wasn't all entirely Donald Trump's fault. Jemele Hill apparently disagrees.
Yes, she does.
And this is where you, I think the relevant question is, did she make her comments in her capacity as a reporter or in her capacity as a citizen of the United States? Those are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And now Ms. Hill is a sports reporter, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in theory, her personal opinion on the president doesn't impact her job at all.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the anchor for which local Pittsburgh station was it?
Wendy Bell.
Wendy Bell, thank you. Because she was reporting on news, and there, mm-hmm. When she made those racially charged comments, it cast doubt on her ability to report the news effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I don't think your opinion on the president or the Congress or the political parties matters one bit if you're covering basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So, excuse me. So I think, for me, it's clearly an incendiary charge to say the president of the United States is a white supremacist. Now, mm-hmm. that said, Trump has kind of painted that picture for himself.
Mm-hmm.
When you say that there are plenty of good people marching with Nazis, there's not a lot of nuance there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make the argument that if she should have amended the sentence, it, just add three words, appears to sympathize with,
mm-hmm.
four words.
Mm-hmm.
But calling for her to be fired, I think, is a step beyond. But let's face it, in recent years, there have been calls for people to be fired for all sorts of cockamamie reasons.
If we had a video camera recording this podcast,
no one would watch.
That's a separate issue altogether.
Okay.
People would notice that I have not taken my eyes off you, and that sounds weird, but I've been watching you as you were delivering your reply, and my mm-hmm responses were not accidental. Okay. They were not accidental. My information gathering class, which meets Tuesday and Thursday, dove into
this. It's like, what was the past pluperfect or something like that?
Oh, Lord. I, some English teacher from way back when is like, if rulers were still allowed to whack hands, she would want to whack my hand right about
I kind of hope our good friend and colleague, Professor Killaney, is not listening, because then I'd be getting an earful.
You'd be getting an earful?
Yeah.
We dove into this conversation this morning in my information gathering class, which is, give or take, about one-third journalism students, one-third sports communication students, and one-third sort of other comm students. So for two-thirds of the students there, it's a required course. I mentioned that to say that I passed out a detailed list of links and stories that have documented what has taken place over the last few days. Summarizing briefly, the consensus in the room was the following. And I say consensus because obviously anytime you have consensus, that means some people said yes, some people said no. So
right. There
were no uniform opinions. One of the questions I asked was, after going through the discussion about Wendy Bell, was it appropriate to fire Wendy Bell?
Right.
And the argument for those who thought it was, summarized briefly in the interest of time here, essentially was that she could no longer, what her personal opinions are her personal opinions, however odious I might find them.
Right.
But she violated one of the most important tenets of journalism, which is to say, be objective and fair in the coverage of the communities in which you work. And as you said, she therefore could in no way, shape, or form validate herself as a journalist covering any issue involving African Americans
in the Pittsburgh area.
So there was a pretty strong consensus that dismissing her was the right thing to do.
And by the way, considering that Black Americans make up a big chunk of Pittsburgh, that basically means she could not report on any news.
If my memory is being accurate, 18% of Pittsburgh's population is African American.
Yeah, that's almost one out of five.
One out of five. You're getting, and even
if it's a small proportion, you're talking about residents of your community.
Of your community, exactly.
Yeah.
And again, if 18% is right, and I think it is, that is by far the largest minority population in this city. It's not even close.
Right.
For the other ones are all in single digits. But
by the way, as a total aside,
yes,
one of the oldest Black communities in the United States is from Pittsburgh.
Yes, it is. This is
Hill true. District.
Yes, it is. So then we got on to the entire discussion about Jemele Hill and what she tweeted.
Sure.
And the debate got a little more fractured. And what I mean by fractured is it was not nearly as a clear consensus. The argument went something like this. If you support the idea that Jemele Hill needs to be sanctioned in some way, the argument is that even though she is a sports reporter, even though she is employed by ESPN, which mm-hmm. claims to not be a news network, but cannot ignore the news taking place around it,
right,
that she still violated the idea that journalists are supposed to, within the bounds of reason, keep their opinions to themselves.
Fair. I mean, I can see, definitely Fair see argument. That argument.
Those who said you can't sanction her essentially said that there is enough evidence out there to validate the idea that if Trump is not a white supremacist himself, he at least is sympathetic to the cause.
Right.
All right?
Or at the very least, sympathetic to them only because they support him.
They support him.
That's probably the most charitable way you could take a look at that.
You can put it. So I then brought in the conversation about, or the example of Curt Schilling. Mm-hmm. Curt Schilling is a really great former Major League Baseball player. Probably cost himself a shot at the Hall of Fame by what he has said on social media of late. Read into that whatever you wish. Last year, when the whole debate in North Carolina was taking place about whether or not there should be a transgender bathroom right. bill, or should the transgender bathroom bill become law, sanitizing his comments for a moment.
Schilling, in the interest of us not getting sanctioned by RMU Radio.
Yeah, or anybody for that matter. Schilling said essentially that men are men, women are women, and they should all go only to the bathroom that is appropriate for a man being a man and a woman being a woman. Anything else is a bunch of nonsense. And again, I'm cleaning up what he said. And so by cleaning up what he said, I'm not really articulating the harshness of some of the words he used. Curt Schilling was fired by ESPN.
Right.
And ESPN's argument at the time was that ESPN prides itself on being an inclusive network,
right,
an inclusive organization, and does not believe that taking personal attacks on individual groups in society is appropriate.
Right. Now, it's interesting because that would actually be an interesting argument and a fairly legitimate one, even if you disagree with it, for censuring Ms. Hill.
Which is what a couple of students argued, that the consistency argument mandates that if you hack off people on the left and it's good enough to get fired, then if you hack off people on the right, it also should be good enough to get fired because it's not right. within your job description.
But let's be honest. Schilling was not let go because he upset lefties. Schilling was let go
because he struck out a lot of lefties. No.
Badooch.
I'll leave no. town here.
Yeah. But no, he was let go because ESPN is first and foremost a business.
Mm-hmm.
And if you become toxic to the brand where people are going to start boycotting your advertisers, you got to let somebody go. So I would suspect Ms. Hill probably should update her resume because in the same vein, rightly or wrongly, there are going to be people on the right who are now almost certainly going to advocate a boycott of ESPN's advertisers until she is let go. That's the economic reality.
Here's what I think. I think there are some similarities in all three stories, and I think there are some differences in all three stories. If you are a consistency believer, two of these three people have been fired.
Right.
The third should probably go under the same argument that these people, doesn't matter their role,
right.
doesn't matter, said something that was inappropriate to journalism. That's argument number one. Argument number two goes something like this. In two of the three cases, meaning Bell and Schilling, there was a direct attack on a group of people.
Right. Whereas with Ms. Bell.
Bell, it was really directed at one person.
Right. Sorry, we have Jemele Bell and Hill. Jemele Hill. Bell.
Right.
Sorry.
The third argument goes something like this, that Bell and Schilling were largely not only taking personal attacks on groups of people, mm-hmm. but did so without having any evidence to back up what they were thinking. It was largely just an I hate you kind of comment.
Right.
Where Hill, you could make an argument.
She's got some evidence.
That there's some evidence, whether you accept it or not is irrelevant. There is evidence, not fact, but there is evidence to indicate that what she said has some relevance and some fact and some truth, which are not the same three terms. They all mean something different. But that she has something to stand on.
Right.
I don't think Jemele Hill's going to get fired.
Well, and maybe not. And because whether she should and whether she will, that's two completely different
questions. And the reason I don't think she will is because that whatever blowback there will be, the White House did sort of take some of the argument and cut its knees right out from under it. When Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press secretary for this White House, went or talking to the media yesterday, essentially said that was a fireable offense. One student asked me this morning, did I think she was speaking for herself or was she told to say that? And my answer to that student was that this is my guess, that Sarah Huckabee Sanders said what she said, knowing that the president would support her. But I don't think she was sent out there to say
she was not given explicit instructions.
Explicit instructions. I don't think Jemele Hill will be fired. Whether she should be, you know, that's that we could take a full podcast and debate that one. But I think ultimately where you stand on that issue comes down to the question of evidence, consistency, public opinion, political climate, and all of those things are not blowing in the same direction.
Correct. By the way, just as one little quick aside, I know we're short on time, but what really struck me about the idiocy of Schilling's comment, look, we've got family restrooms. Because if you have toddlers, let's face it, you know that the bathroom experience is just one giant D-Day until they finally get it right.
Yes.
We already have bathrooms where men and women can go in. There should be one and only one requirement. Just wash your hands.
Okay. I agree. Now, we have to end with your September 14th, 81 historical moment that you mentioned to us just before we went on the air, and then we will wrap up episode 3.
Okay, so this is going way back.
Way back.
So on September the 14th, in the year 81.
There are no two decimals in front of that.
No, this is the year 81, or as the Romans called it, LXXXI.
Beats me.
The emperor Domitian became emperor of Rome upon the death of his brother Titus.
And do we know how Titus died?
We don't know. There's always juicy gossip one way or the other. Death could come quickly in the ancient world because they didn't understand germs, among other things. We do know that Domitian, although he would reign for the next 9-ish years, was not the greatest emperor Rome ever had. But he was.
And somehow we have come full circle to the U.S. in 2017.
Although, in all fairness, Domitian, his father, Vespasian, finished the Colosseum.
Yes.
Vespasian knew how to get stuff done.
And Trump's father's money allowed him to build some pretty fancy hotels as well. We are indeed full circle.
We are full circle.
You are?
Soren Fanning.
I am
Anthony Baretti.
And this wraps up episode 3 of Upon Further Review with
the Podcast Profs.
Talk to you next week.